do you think if we sing Come, Come, Whoever You Are, they will? Let's try it. It's number 188 if you don't know it, but I'll just lead it. Come, come, whoever you are, wanderer, worshiper, lover of leaving, ours is no caravan of despair. Come yet again, come. Let's do it again. Come, come, whoever you are, wanderer, worshiper, lover of leaving, ours is no caravan of despair. Come yet again, come. Come, whoever you are, from wherever you set aside to be here. Okay, you want to get together? Yeah. So you all are going to all be over there, and I'm going to be over here. Is that how it works? Nobody has to be the kids. We are very flexible this morning. We'll be very flexible. We'll be very informal. I think I will use the sound because I still hear see Larry going like this. So might as well use the sound.
Turn it on my hearing aids.
Whoever you are, whoever you love, whoever you call your people, whatever you believe, you're welcome here. We have some activities here if there were any children who showed up. And since we don't see any children, if anybody wants to color on coloring sheets, you're welcome to do so, even if you're not children. So we come to celebrate Christmas and not to get caught up in or stuck in the theology of the occasion or to debate its merits, but instead to approach the season as well as one another with an attitude of curiosity. And I think everybody's probably said good morning to everybody who's here already. So good morning. Good morning, Susan. Welcome. We're gathering a little close. Would somebody be willing to light the chalice while I read? Sure. This is by Alfred Cole. Into the bright circle of life and light, which is the Christmas season, we have come. Out of the routine ways of living and the drab little ruts of habit, we've come to warm our hearts and minds at the cradle of the child. May something of the beauty, mystery, and romance of this lovely old story fall like silver rain upon the broken dreams, the hates and fears of all. Once again, may we pause, look up, and in the far-off distances hear that old, old music, the music of hope, brotherhood, sisterhood, family, and blessed peace. So let's join in singing number 235, Deck the Hall with Boughs of Holly. Get into the spirit.
Thank you.
Please be seated, yeah. Part of gathering together always is our sharing of joys and sorrows. I did hear this morning some sad news that Jim Mitchell, who was a member here, died. I don't know any of the details, but Shirley had heard that, had gotten that from Ruth Friedman. So I thought that I would share that in our joys and sorrows. And we're really glad to see Wayne here with us. He's been through a little bit of a trial here, so glad you're here. Are there other joys and sorrows to share this morning?
We'll use the mic for the recording, so, and I need you to hold it, Mike.
Gene Severs. Dixie and I celebrated our first year in our house, our first Christmas in our house, with both my daughters and my brother and David and Judy from Zinedale, my literally best friends and family for 37 plus years. And so that was extra special for us.
I was saddened to hear the news about Jim. Jim, for those of you who did not know him, it was a psychology professor for a long time at K-State, member of the fellowship here, and he could not stand this spiritual stuff. All this rigmarole, my gosh, this is just too wishy-washy. Nothing like this would go with Jim, but he was a wonderful guy in just a lot of ways. He had worked in auto factories and as a young man and been very active in the union movement. And that's what he thought we should be about and not anything else.
I'm really happy to acknowledge that after a week of hospitalization and 6 weeks in rehab, my dad's going back to his assisted living apartment this week. So.
Good. Our joys and sorrows unite us as a people and help us be aware of the larger community who isn't here with us today but who remains in our hearts. So I wonder if maybe I should have that mic, though, because I want to wander around a little bit. So last night we put together this creche. We had the children help to put together the creche. And I called it the creche from the Gospel of Matthew because in Luke you have the shepherds and the angels, and in Matthew you have the wise men. And this creche, if you look, it doesn't have any shepherds and angels. It just has the wise men. So I kind of wanted to focus a little bit on these guys this morning because they come bearing gifts, right? What'd they come with?
Gold, frankincense, and myrrh.
Gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Now, why would you bring a baby gold, frankincense, and myrrh?
He's
from the house and lineage of David, and you want to tell the folks he's the king. Exactly, because others had brought to the temple gold and frankincense and myrrh, the gold to recognize the king, the frankincense as an essence, a resin that rises up to heaven, and it represents the priestly role, and then the myrrh that really is about death and burial, because that was a spice that was used to prepare the body for burial. So you know, the biblical text doesn't really say anything about how many guys came, and it doesn't say anything about who they were, there's a tradition that calls the, who knows those names? Do you know the names? Balthazar, Caspar, Melchior. Yeah, that's the tradition that Caspar has brown hair and a brown beard, and wears a green cloak and a gold crown with green jewels in it, and is the king of Sheba. And he's supposed to bring the frankincense. Melchior has long white hair and a white beard and a gold cloak and is king of Arabia, and he brings the gold. And Balthazar is black-skinned and has a black beard or no beard and wears a purple cloak and is the king of Tars and Egypt. And Balthazar represents the gift of myrrh. It's interesting how much gifts and symbols are a part of the story. And as Larry suggested, it was so that it could come into agreement kind of with some of the prophecies and that kind of thing. But I like the story about the 3 6-year-old boys who were playing the part of Magi in the Christmas pageant. And as they came up to Mary and Joseph in the stable, the first one handed his present and said, gold, and the second one said, myrrh, and the third one comes up and says, frankincense this. So sometimes we have misunderstandings about gifts and stuff. But these were the same gifts that were brought to other kings, like Solomon, but also like Apollo. Apollo received those gifts as well. There are many different purposes for gifts. So why do people bring gifts? To say thank you? Because the recipient really needs it. To show love, to show respect. Sometimes to win favor. There are lots of complicated reasons for gifts. And what's the best reason for giving gifts? Because you want to. Love. I'd say love is the best reason for giving gifts. So let's stand and sing number 259, We Three Kings.
Guide us through this perfect night. Born a babe.
speaking of gifts, the way the congregation survives, the way the fellowship survives, is through the gifts of its members. And so we'll have an offering for the support of the fellowship. A Christmas Prayer by Maureen Killoran. Not gold, nor myrrh, nor even frankincense would I have for you this evening, but this season, but simple gifts, the ones that are hardest to find, the ones that are perfect, even for those who have everything, if such there be. I would, if I could, have for you the gift of courage, the strength to face the gauntlets only you can name, and the firmness in your heart to know that you, yes, you, can be a bearer of the quiet dignity that is the human glorified. I would, if by my intention I could make it happen, have for you the gift of connection, the sense of standing on the hinge of time, touching past and future, standing with certainty that you, yes, you, are the point where it all comes together. I would, if wishing could make it so, have for you the gift of community, a nucleus of love and challenge, to convince you in your soul that you, yes, you are a source of light in a world too long believing in the dark. Not gold, nor myrrh, nor even frankincense would I have for you this season, but simple gifts, the ones that are hardest to find, the ones that are perfect even for those who have everything, if such there be. Our hymn is number 55, Dark of Winter.
Let my heart go where it will.
So you see in the order of service it says shared reflection. That is because you are going to be reflecting with me. And I thought that this would be a small group this morning, and so I thought it would be nice if we could share some of our stories. And I want to start with remembering the best Christmas gift you ever received. Maybe it was from many years ago when you were a child, or maybe it's something that you've gotten as an adult that was just right for you. And I think when I try to remember my best Christmas gift, it was actually furniture. And I was 10 years old, and we moved into a new house just before Christmas, and I got a new bedroom set and dresser. It was the four-poster bed with canopy, white dresser, white desk, everything. And my parents told me it was my birthday and Christmas gift, because my birthday is December 22nd. And I loved it. It was my best Christmas gift ever. So who has a story of their best Christmas gift ever? Renee does.
As far as just like material gifts, which I assume is the focus that we're kind of going with, I remember one Christmas I had spent the whole year coveting like the Slinky Dog from Toy Story. I wanted it really, really bad, and I'd been begging for it and begging for it. And Christmas came around, and we had all unwrapped our presents, and there wasn't a Slinky Dog. And so I was sitting there kind of by myself, and my grandpa came over to me, and he's like, "Renee, what's wrong?" And I said, I had silent tears running down my face. And I said, "Nothing. Thank you for the lovely presents. I love you." And then he's like, "Oh, well, there's still one back there." And it was the Slinky Dog. And I was like, "Oh." I was so happy.
I'm not back on the volume control, so I need you to hold it down right
there. All right. Is that okay? Well, I remember a Christmas back in the 70s. I was recently divorced, and I bought a house, but I was actually a slumlord, except that I lived in the slum, and I rented the nice part of the house. At one point, in fact, Sandy Nelson. So she likes to say that she and I lived together before they got married. She was a renter. I was just living in this 20 by 40 cement floor room. Don't even remember if it had heat. But I had gotten some, what do you call those white flowers that grow up, paper whites, that was it. Mm. And I had learned back in October or November how to force them. And in December, late December, Christmas time, they actually started blooming. And I just thought that that was wonderful, and that I was the catch meow for doing that.
So the best gift that my pops ever gave me was the moped in 96. I wanted a motorcycle so bad, but he wasn't going to give me a motorcycle, but he did break out a moped that he worked really hard to get me, and I remember putting it into the bush not 30 seconds later outside. So it was the best Christmas and the best wreck ever. So
I'll try to do this without crying, but in 1999, when my husband was living with a brain tumor and not really supposed to drive, he went all the way over to Topeka to buy me a cashmere sweater, which sounds kind of simple, but that he thought that it was something that I really wanted, and that he made the effort to go find it when he was not in really great shape meant a great deal to me.
Mm-hmm. I grew up in a fairly poor family, and my mother always wanted to make sure we had presents that would help us fit in with others. And that was a hardship on her. She worked very hard to earn extra money, and my father was very tight-fisted and really didn't believe in gifts and Christmas and never bought my mother a gift. And in my teenage years, my parents were divorcing, and my mother was even more stressed than usual, of course. And really, there was never a time in our family when we asked for gifts because we had been taught not to. And Christmas morning, I came out, and there was this beautiful yellow bicycle in the living room for me. And I just would never have expected that. I was so surprised. And I just know how hard my mother was thinking and trying to make sure there was a nice present. And I appreciate her hard work in my life.
I really don't have a favorite present. I grew up in post-war Germany, and presents were really not very important. Mm-hmm. So when I came to the United States, I was truly, truly overwhelmed about the gift-giving in the family that I joined. I kind of got used to it quickly. And my sons got... Because we went there for Christmas every year, I didn't want them to kind of feel left out, so they got lavish Christmases. I always enjoy the gifts that my sons give me. They always pick books that they think may interest me. But I really don't have a favorite gift as such.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't have a favorite gift, but more a long-term activity, which grew out of a need to find something to eat on Christmas morning that could be prepared. And we started making cinnamon rolls. And this was something that grew as our family grew. And it was first us, and then Emily and Olivia joined us, and Julia joined us, and the 24th of December was a day of great baking and joy, which we then shared with friends.
So sometimes some of our best memories of Christmas are not of the gifts that we've gotten, but are the gifts that we've given. I was always notorious through young adulthood, certainly, for being late with giving Christmas gifts. I think I had an attitude that I shouldn't do Christmas shopping before my birthday, which was the 22nd of December. So a lot of times people would get my Christmas gifts a week late, something like that. But and so I wasn't a great planner for Christmas. And one year when Jane and I were living in Oklahoma, and my mother and brother lived there as well, but my mother was away at my other brother's, and so my brother was going to be alone. And it didn't even occur to me somehow until that day. He had worked the night before. He'd worked Christmas Eve, and it didn't even occur to me until that day that we should, like, do something. So, like, at the last minute, I decided, well, we'll do a roast. And Jane and I decided we'd do a roast, and I called him up and said, so, Robert, you want to come for a roast? And he said, okay, I could do that. I got him up out of bed, I think, because I think he had been working really late. And he came, and we had a Christmas dinner, and then we took him to the movies, which was, and it was one of my favorite Christmases ever. That was just Jane and my brother, who's now deceased, and me enjoying a very impromptu Christmas. And it feels like a gift that we gave So are there gifts that you have given that have been profound or memorable for you?
My favorite Christmas would have been 2000 when my girls were with me.
We always had really big Christmases at my grandpa's house, and so it was like a three-bedroom house, and we'd have like 20 people living there for like a week. It was super packed. And so one year I wanted to do, like, I don't know, drawings for everybody, and so I went into the room where that's like naturally cold. It's kind of like the mud room. I don't know if that means anything to anyone. And I locked myself in there, and I had put signs up, keep out, everyone. Spent like 8 hours drawing and drawing and drawing. And I'm sure that, like, it didn't mean much to them, but I had a lot of fun doing it.
A lot of times it's not the gifts that make Christmas memorable, but the love. And I mean, I can remember being fairly young. My brother was 7 years younger than I was, and when my parents would let me help be Santa Claus, you know, do some of the wrapping and, you know, put things in. It didn't occur to me at the time that they were doing that because they wanted it to get done. Because to me, it was like an honor to be Santa Claus. But the memories of laughing around the table with my cousins at Christmas dinner, and the year that we drove to New Jersey and got stuck there because of a snowstorm, so my cousins ended up having to share their gifts with us. Going to look at lights, my personal favorite thing to do, just to drive and search, or sit. In Oklahoma City, there was a particular house that had a tremendous display that had like a radio you tuned to watch the lights go. And I love to just sit in the bank parking lot and watch that. So any other memories of Christmases past that you'd like to share?
My sons were little, and we lived in Germany, and their dad was deployed. He was in Cyprus for the holidays. So my sister, and of course my parents joined us, my sister came a day early, and I had to run some errands, and she was not able to control those two little boys. So my older son, Thomas, peeked in the basement room, and there were lots of toys in there. And I came back from shopping, and my sister said, "I'm so sorry, but he saw all the Christmas gifts." And I said, "Oh, well, that's okay." So I removed them all, and Thomas said, Mom, Santa left a lot of toys in our basement." And I said, "Really?" And so I took him in there, and there was nothing there.
Did he get toys that Christmas? Did he get toys that Christmas? So one of the great stories about Christmas gifts is the one by O. Henry, The Gift of the Magi. And he contrasts the wise ones with the foolish children who sell what they most value to get a gift for one another. And we're gonna watch a little video that's an updated version of the story. It's not the gifts, it's the love. Let's sing number 255, There's a Star in the East. The words of Richard Gilbert, faith, hope, love, these three, I offer you this season. Faith that living affirms, hope that caring illumines, love that more matters than anything. Faith, hope, love, these three, not as gifts I offer them, for they are not mine to give. They are yours and mine to share, humbly with one another. Fumbling, we hold their promise in our hands. Faintly, we speak the trembling words. Faith, hope, love. These three I offer you this season. So may it be. And there are leftover cookies in the Alsop room, and I think there's coffee and leftover coffee.